with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to a Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented as always by BetMGM. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, and we're giving you the best of the West Coast today as Mike Somich joins us from over in LA, still basking in the glow of your Maui trip, by the way. You do look tan right now. We were just talking about your vacation, but the tan has stayed.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I don't burn very much. So, a couple days of you need the suntan lotion on. And then after that, it's that nice olive color. So we enjoy it. It's fun to be in the sun. And Maui is a great sun. It's beautiful down there.
I am so jealous because I am the type of person that burns instantly. And it just like hashtag pale people problems. This is my life. But excited to have you with us today. Got a great couple of hours on tap. If you want to join the conversation with us, make sure you tweet at us at VSiN Live, at SambaBomb18, and at StormBonAntoni, although that's a lot of letters, so maybe stick with the other two. As for what we've got on tap today, some baseball talk recapping last night. A little bit later, we'll look ahead to some numbers in Major League Baseball as we get set for the second half of the season. Betting analyst at Bet Karma, Johnny Venezia, is going to join us. We'll get to some of the happenings here in Vegas for Summer League. Heavy NFL and college football day as well. We'll get an AFC North preview in here coming up. Plus, the Jets officially the team of Hard Knocks in hour two. We'll discuss some of the pros and cons there. The Pat Fitzgerald saga, of course, rolls on with Northwestern. So a lot of the college football conversation we'll have coming up at about 1:30 Eastern, at 12:30 Eastern with Brian Fisher, college football writer at Fox Sports. But we'll start with the MLB All-Star game last night. Mike, I don't know if you had anything invested in the game. I ended up pulling the trigger on the National League to win the game, which thankfully did come through. The drought is over. After 9 years of it being all things American League winning the All-Star game, the NL gets it done.
Yeah, good call on the NL there. Like you mentioned, 9 straight wins for the AL. NL finally be able to come through. Clutch 2-run homer late in the game. It was actually a pretty fun game. They've done a good job with the All-Star game in Major League Baseball and making it a little more interesting in these sides. I was on the under, first five, under four. It was minus 120 yesterday. Under another trend in these All-Star games that we've consistently seen come through. This is now 4 straight unders. I believe it's 5, or it's 7 of the last 8 have now gone under, and 9 of the last 11 have had 8 or less runs in the game. So we've consistently seen unders come in these All-Star games, which is kind of adverse to the trend that you've seen. NBA All-Star games, NHL All-Star games, you've generally seen overs. And MLB, the under is really a great bet, especially that first five under. So this is one of those things where I tag my calendar every single year for the following year. I've got a note already for next year on July 5th. Hey, start looking for this All-Star game under because you want to make sure you get in it early. It's generally going to get bet. And it's logical to play as well. If you look at it, you've got these top tier starters that generally go 6 or 7 innings. Well, now they get to pitch one, and they get to go 100% for that one inning, and they are able to dominate in a lot of spots. So love me the unders in the Major League Baseball All-Star game. Looking forward to betting again next year.
Yeah, and the old adage is great pitching beats great hitting, right? So makes sense when it comes to the All-Star game situation. And at first, we thought it might be a little bit dicey when Gerrit Cole gets lit up for a couple pops out to left and right, but some amazing catches at the warning track there. Put that to bed, and you said it. It was a fun game to watch, very entertaining. 3-2, the final, and congrats to Diaz, who hit that 8th inning 2-run homer, 32 years old, his first All-Star game appearance, his first All-Star at bat. He ends up getting the win and the MVP. 14-1 for him to hit a home run, 90-1 as high as to win MVP for the game. So great for him. Great for some highlights as well. And the come to Seattle chance. Credit the home team for trying to get on the Shohei Ohtani bandwagon. He's not going to Seattle, but I appreciate the effort.
Yeah, I don't think the Seattle is going to be the landing spot there, but hey, you got to take your shot. You got one chance here to try and get Shohei if you're the Mariners, and this was it, and hey, they showed up. I thought Seattle did a great job all weekend as well. We saw Julio Rodriguez absolutely go off in the first round of the Home Run Derby. The home crowd was keeping him going and lighting him on fire, so it was fun to see Seattle show out in this way. Really a great sports town. I don't think it's enough credit for it. We saw them lose the Supersonics to Oklahoma City. They really show out and show up. And the Kraken, I think, is a great example. That was a rocking arena in the NHL all year this year for the first season there up in Seattle.
Yeah, no question. And what you said there about Rodriguez as well, a single round record, 41 home runs, and the crowd was into it. It was super fun. I felt for him that he was just gassed from that early round performance. You wonder what could have been if he got to go second in that first round instead of having to go first and just trying to put up as many homers as you can. I love the home run derby, though. I think the MLB All-Star Game is tops when it comes to the four major professional sports. The only thing I wish was different was that the uniforms were their team uniforms. I get that the league's got to make money selling those NL and AL All-Star Game jerseys, but I am a fan of, you know, making making it known who your team is very, very clearly out there in the field. It's always really fun to see. We've also had NBA Summer League going on here. Two undefeated teams remaining, Mike, the Cavs and Rockets. Number two overall pick to Charlotte, Brandon Miller, finally had a good day. It's been a slow, rough start for him. We know Wemby is shut down now moving forward. But for me, the most interesting stuff that's come out of Summer League and come out of Vegas has actually been off the court. We saw the Blazers GM talk in his media availability earlier this week about how, hey, if it takes months, it takes months to trade Dame. And now we also are getting some great quotes from Zion Williamson talking about some of the issues that he's had with weight and injuries. Here's Zion speaking on the Gills Arena podcast this week.
Is it hard to diet at your age?
Jeez.
Be honest.
Since it's you, I'll be real. There are times when I will say that, man, that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard, man. Like, you 20, 22, got a lot of money. It feels like all the money in the world, man. It is hard, but I'm at that point now where, because of certain things, I'm putting back, like, the wisdom around me, a bunch of, like, I don't want to say older because they take offense to it. And I'm just putting people around me with wisdom, put me on game to certain things, and just go from there.
So the diet piece, I'm always able to come back each summer feeling good, looking good. Yep. But I would say it's more of just locking in on, like, flexibility, band work. Because I think it's those things that will be able to keep me on the court longer versus just losing a bunch of weight and then coming to play and not being able to maintain that. So just, I mean, Bron got the blueprint.
Yeah.
I'm trying my best to follow. Man, I'm a hooper. So when I'm sitting on the sideline watching my teammates in certain games they lose, I'm like, man, I know if I was out there, I can change the outcome of it. So whether people want to believe it or not, when I'm on the sideline, man, that hurt me more than anything. I just want to hoop.
Mentioned a few times, Mike, this invincibility idea, being a young guy with all this money, feeling like nothing can stop you and kind of being faced with the realities of his situation right now. I thought it was really nice and refreshing to hear Zion admit and talk about some of the issues that have plagued him in his young career in the NBA.
It's definitely nice to hear the accountability where he knows that I need to stay on the court, because availability is a stat in the NBA especially. And if you're not able to be on the court, especially when you're as dynamic as Zion is, it hurts your team significantly. And it's going to hurt his career if he's not able to figure this out, because he's not going to get the contracts down the line that he would. And there was rumors that the number three pick for Zion was turned down by Dame because he was worried that Zion wouldn't be healthy there up in Portland. So if that's the case, you got to take care of it. The one thing I didn't love in that interview is he said, I've come in every season and I've been in shape and I've been looking good. And I would disagree with that one, Zion. I don't think you've been in shape every single year coming into it. And he talks about the blueprint for LeBron. LeBron is just an Adonis. He's just sculpted every single year coming in. That's not been the case with Zion. That's where he needs to get. There was an interesting interview. CJ McCollum was interviewed on the Ryan Russillo podcast earlier this year, and he talked about some of the conversations he's had with Zion and how getting the right people around Zion has been a big part of Zion's growth. He hit the nail on the head. Like, he's in his early 20s with all the money in the world. It's very easy not to focus on what you need to focus on if your priority isn't 100% basketball. And hopefully changing up some of the people around him helps him focus on just basketball alone, because this is a generational talent. When he is on the court, he is dynamic. He can change the game. He's dead on there. Last year, averaged 26-8-6, I believe it was. And this was the number one team in the West for a while when Zion was healthy. This is a very good roster. There is a window for them to be successful, and they have assets to get another piece if they want to. His fitness specifically is just so important to this organization, and he doesn't need to lose, 80 pounds. I think he's at 285 right now is the listing weight. He needs to get to like 250 and sculpted in shape, be able to run up and down the court. And the band work is important because his knees have been a problem. So we'll see what this summer does. But it's nice to hear from him at least saying, hey, I acknowledge this is a problem. I need to address it. I'm trying to take steps to do just that.
Right. And to your point about surrounding yourself with the right people, that was another portion of the interview when I listened to it yesterday, was that he said that brutal honesty is something that he kind of needs around him and is important to have the right guys that are imparting wisdom and not listening to people just to listen and be doing his own thing. So I think that's great that he recognized that as well. When it comes to where this team was at last season, I mean, beginning of January, Pelicans looked legit. There was a ton of optimism. They were looking like a top three team in the league at that point. When you look at odds for next season, 20-1 for the Pelicans to win the West, and you have to imagine that if he is healthy and he's living up to that contract that he was signed, which was 5 years, $200 million extension that he signed, it could be a really, really positive, great thing for the New Orleans Pelicans. They're 40-1 to win the title. He's 35-1 odds to win next year's MVP. But diet, exercise, the bands, all of these things critical for Zion Williamson. I mean, so much so that there is a weight clause in his contract that he can't be over 295 pounds. That shows that the organization doesn't have the trust in you necessarily, that you need to do what you're doing off of the court. Williamson only appeared in 114 out of a possible 308 regular season games since he was drafted the first overall pick in 2019 out of Duke. So I hope for the Pelicans' sake and his sake that he does stay healthy, because, I mean, it's better for us as viewers and bettors wanting to buy in on this team in the future. Fingers crossed he can get it done. We got to take a quick break here. Our first time out of the show coming up. We'll continue to break down these regular season NFL divisions. Could this team in the AFC North go from worst to first? We'll break it all down in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. No Michael Lombardi today, but the bosses are very kind to me having my co-host be named Mike, so I don't have any risk. Mike Somich on the program alongside myself, Stormy Bonantoni here. And throughout this offseason, this is kind of the time where, especially right after the MLB All-Star Game, right? This is known nationwide as the one day where there's like no sports betting really going on other than Wimbledon. It's a quote unquote dead time, right? But I think creates great opportunity for us to look at some futures. And we have been slowly but surely moving our way through each NFL team, each division along the way. And so today we're going to get into the AFC North here a little bit. The Cincinnati Bengals, the two-time AFC North champions the last 2 years, deep playoff ones, runs, AFC championship appearances, a Super Bowl appearance last year. Bengals went 12-4, have an 11.5 win total this year. So they are certainly at the top of things. But Mike, we were just talking about it in the commercial break. This division, like, it looks like every team on paper has made improvements. It could be an exciting one to keep tabs on.
Yeah, you got a fun second-year quarterback in Pittsburgh. You got Mike Tomlin there, who we have never seen have a losing season as a head coach. Everyone knows about that. You've got the Browns, who should be a lot better here, second year with Deshaun Watson. That's still a very good defense on paper. If they can play up to that potential, they could be a problem in this division. I love what the Ravens did in the offseason. They added to the wide receiver room, which was a clear weakness for them. Got a new offensive coordinator who I think will fit with Lamar Jackson much better. He also got paid, so you'd expect that you're going to see some improvement from him as well. And then the Bengals are the Bengals. I mean, they're a tough team, perennial division winner here now, a team that really turned around this franchise from the lovable loser aspect to a winning team. Got Joe Burrow at the helm. This is one of the divisions where I think it's wildly unpredictable. There's a couple divisions in the NFL, like let's say the NFC West, right, where, look, it's Seattle or San Francisco up top, it's the Rams or Arizona at the bottom. You could make an argument that any of these teams could finish anywhere 1-4 inside of this division.
And I know based on the schedule, there's a different angle for how you might want to bet some of these teams. What were some things that really stood out to you when you looked at each of these upcoming slates for these teams?
Well, you have a massive game week one right out of the gate. So the Bengals are going to the Browns. So if you like either of these teams as a division winner, betting them before week one is an important spot to get that. The Browns, obviously, if they knock off the Bengals, you're going to see those odds shorten up immediately because you have a in-division win against most likely the division favorite, or the definitely division favorite preseason here in the Bengals. That gives them a step forward. And you're also going to get a lot of buzz around, okay, Deshaun Watson's second year, this offense has figured it out. If they're able to get that win, their odds are going to shorten quickly. They'll become the second choice or maybe even the favorite if they're able to get that win week one, depending on what the Ravens do. And the Bengals on the other side of this, they've got a fairly easy schedule early if they're able to get through the Browns. So it's a situation where if you like the Bengals early or if you like the Browns early, the time to bet them in the division is before the season starts because you're going to get the best number before those that week one game, depending on who wins it. If you're a Ravens fan here, I think you wait a little bit. You've got two tough games. You're at the Bengals and you're at the Browns in the first 4 weeks. It's going to be hard for them to go any better than 1-1. I would expect them to go 0-2 there. You also have that new offensive coordinator coming in, which is going to create a little bit more of an issue early in the season as they get used to this offense, especially with the starters, because you're not going to see them a ton in the preseason. So I like this Ravens team after week four if you want to bet them to win the division. And they're a team that I would take a look at their season win total after that fourth week, because I think that's when you can start getting some value inside the Ravens organization from a both division and win total perspective. Once you've seen them play a couple of these tough games, and if you're going to take them, you're rooting for them to lose those games because that's when you're going to get the best value out of it. And then they get both of those teams in the Browns and the Bengals at home later in the season.
Another thing that I think is pretty interesting about this division is the quarterback play in general, because with a division that has a former NFL MVP in it, in Lamar Jackson, I don't think that I'm out of pocket saying that Joe Burrow is the best quarterback in this division. And then you have Deshaun Watson, who is a real wild card when it comes to things this year, because he could be a top three quarterback in the NFL, or he could be the, you know, 26, 27, depending on how he performs. Because we all remember how great he was prior to all of the different things that had to go on with him off of the field. And then last year, you know, you have 700 plus days where you're not on a football field playing competitive games, trying to get worked in the back half of the season when a team had been in a groove without you. It's a really weird situation. So is he able to get back to form? And then you've got a young up and comer in Kenny Pickett as a quarterback who's kind of the odd man out. But the quarterback play in this division has potential to be pretty high caliber this year.
It could be phenomenal. I mean, you could arguably have three of the best five quarterbacks in the NFL all coming out of this same division with Burrow, with Jackson, and with Cleveland's quarterback as well. So if you have these three quarterbacks that absolutely that are phenomenal, it really puts Pittsburgh in a tough spot. I like Kenny Pickett. I thought Kenny Pickett was much better than what I was expecting that first year as a rookie. You'd think he's going to take a step forward, but this is a really tough division for Pittsburgh to be in. There is a path that they go 1-5 or 0-6 inside the division. And we talked about Tomlin never having a losing record. That win total sitting at 8.5. To me, this Pittsburgh team is more of an underplay than an overplay, specifically because of how good this division is. But with Deshaun Watson and with Cleveland, they could be the biggest variance team in the entire NFL. You could tell me they went 12-5. You could tell me they went 5-12, and I wouldn't be shocked either way, because so much of it depends on what version of Deshaun Watson we get this year.
Talking NFC North here on the Lombardi Line, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. If you had to make a bet in the division right now based on where the odds currently stand, who would your pick be?
Oh,
I know it's tough.
I wouldn't play the Bengals. I still have offensive line concerns in Cincinnati. And
that's interesting because last offseason they invested. This offseason they took another step investing in protecting their quarterback. You're still concerned?
Well, last offseason they invested, but it didn't really fix much. Yeah. Joe Burrow still
got it. It didn't pay out how they had hoped.
Yeah. So they went back to the drawing board here, and they need to fix this problem. And the issue with me is Joe Burrow has had a serious knee injury already. He's going to get hit a ton again this year. These are some pretty good defenses in this division as well with solid pass rushers. It's not like you're playing a bunch of bad defenses with great offenses. This is a pretty well-rounded division. I still have concerns around Joe Burrow staying healthy for a full season. If he misses 3, 4, 5 games, or God forbid more, plus 150 is a really tough number to swallow. Lamar Jackson and that Ravens team at plus 220 is a little interesting. I mentioned the Browns at plus 425. To win the division, that would probably be the direction I would go, just simply because, as I mentioned, the variance is massive here. And the fact that you can get them plus 425 right now, and after week one, you're probably staring at somewhere between plus 175 and plus 200 if they win a home game in division against the Bengals. To me, that's the side that I would bet at this moment. I would not take the favorite here, though. To me, this is a division where you're going to try and upset the apple cart a little bit and go against the Bengals.
And it appears our mics are in line, because Michael Lombardi as well, in this year's NFL betting guide that was released, a week and a half ago now, he picked the Browns to win the division. So we'll see if Deshaun Watson can get things figured out and get that offense where it needs to be. And if Jim Schwartz can shore up the defense and continue to make that a strength of the team, if things could come together for Cleveland, that would certainly be a bright light, and they would be getting what they paid for, and they paid a lot for old boy Deshaun Watson. There's some also odds up. I know we just had him on the screen a moment ago for division finishing position based on, you know, it could this team finish second, third, respectively. I was really sad that the Bengals to finish second was only plus 180. Your girl wanted more.
Yeah. That's a good look. I mean, because you have two teams that logically could finish ahead of them here in both the Ravens and the Browns. Some of these, the finishing spots are tough. If you look at the exactas or the exact finish inside the division, mm-hmm. I think some of those odds are really interesting, especially if you're not taking the favorite in that first place position. And if you want to slot the Steelers into fourth, they're plus 175 right now to finish fourth. I think that's the most logical spot for them to finish. I'm surprised the Steelers finishing fourth isn't a shorter price than the Bengals winning the division, because I think it's much more likely that the Steelers finish fourth in this division at plus 175 than the Bengals win the division at plus 150, simply because the only way the Steelers don't finish fourth in this division is the Browns are a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
It could, because the Ravens and the Bengals are going to finish ahead of the Steelers this year. So it's whether or not the Browns finish ahead of the Steelers. And to me, plus 175 on the Steelers finishing fourth seems like the best bet in this spot. And it's a good way to, if you don't want to play the under on the Steelers, getting plus 175, they're not going over their total if you cash that last place bet. So I like that Steelers finishing fourth at plus 175.
Real quickly, I know we're up against it, but do you think Todd Monken will have a positive influence on Lamar Jackson in that offense?
I do. I think it's a great switch. I think you're going to see a lot more play action, which I think is going to be beneficial for Lamar. I think you're going to see a lot more rollouts, more creativity in the offense, and the wide receiver upgrade is going to help out as well. I think this Baltimore offense is going to be significantly better than what we saw last year, and I wouldn't be shocked if you have a lot of Lamar Jackson for MVP talk midway through the season.
Yeah, love the Zay Flowers addition. Had a really good draft. Sign Odell Beckham Jr., making your quarterback happy. So we'll see how that translates onto the field. Today marks the start of talking season in college football. Big 12 media days underway, but the big news is actually in the Big Ten and everything that's been going on at Northwestern. We will break down that situation next with Fox Sports national college football writer Brian Fisher. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. The NFL betting guide is going to help you get ahead of everything you need to know this NFL season with in-depth profiles of each team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, props, and more. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19. Get your digital copy of the VSiN NFL betting guide, or you can take advantage of our summer kickoff special where you get access to everything we do here at VSiN from now through the Super Bowl in February for just $175. That is value. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. We'll talk plenty more NFL a little bit later on in the show, but for now, turn our attention to college football. And this is the time of year where usually we're talking about how many returning starters are coming back for a team. Who had the best transfer portal class? Which dark horse team could be a contender for the title? And we still will talk about a number of those things. But what we're not used to talking about is a coach being fired for cause 6 weeks ahead of the college football season getting underway. To help us discuss the situation that's going on with Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern and a whole lot more of college football, we bring in Brian Fisher, national college football writer at Fox Sports, host of the Head Coach U podcast as well. Brian, glad to have you with us today. Obviously, a lot to unpack with what's going on there at Northwestern right now.
Yes. I think, you know, everybody kind of expects that at some point there's going to be some big news event in July, but I don't know if anybody in the college football world probably could have seen Pat Fitzgerald, being fired, especially in the time frame, that it took place. I think, you talk about somebody who had, prior to this, really a sterling reputation in the game, and, really he's out, and a lot more questions facing Northwestern moving forward.
With this Northwestern job at Pat Fitzgerald out, you've obviously got a Power 5 job opening up. Major city is Chicago. You've got a lot of money from the donor perspective there as well. Beautiful practice facilities. Probably need to upgrade the actual stadium they play in a little bit. Do you think there's going to be a lot of interest for this Northwestern job? Is this a marquee job that's opening up just because it's in a Power 5?
I think that does land a lot of cachet, within the coaching community. The fact that it is one of really the kind of, not even a Power 5, but one of the big two leagues in terms of the Big Ten and the SEC. You are located in Chicago, which can be a blessing and a curse, depending on how you look at it from a media angle as well. I think overall, though, everybody understands that prior to Pat Fitzgerald, taking over, this was a hard place to win at. And it's still going to be an even harder place to win at moving forward, especially with the Big Ten kind of going away from divisions. You're not going to get as many regular games against an Indiana or a Rutgers or a Maryland as you kind of once were. And I think for the most part, that's going to kind of hamper, really the long-term trajectory of this program. But it's still a Big Ten job. I think there's going to be some decent interest. I don't know if it's going to be the most attractive opening, especially given, let's face it, the roster is going to be in flux, even more so given the fact that you're likely going to have an interim staff for a full season. That typically hurts, your overall depth on top of all the transfers that end up happening. But, it is a gleaming new football facility. It's probably the nicest in the country right there on the shores of Lake Michigan. So there's a lot going for the job, but I think overall it's not the upper tier type of gig that I think some coaches might have an eye on.
And probably takes a little bit like a special type of a coach too to understand the academic rigors that come along with the job as well. It's interesting from the on-field standpoint where things sit right now. The first 13 seasons, Fitzgerald was with the program's 10 bowl games, but the recent history has been pretty bad football these last 2 years. Last year, you beat Nebraska week one in Ireland, then go 0-11 the rest of the way, including a bad loss to an FCS program. Year before that, 3-9, lost 6 straight to end that season. Looking ahead to this year, they lost a lot of talent off of that 1-11 team, most notably up front with the offensive line. Peter Skoronski, who's the Northwestern nightmare, he's in the NFL now. What are your expectations for the team this year, especially with everything that's going on off the field, trying to band together, start their season come September 3rd against Rutgers?
Yeah, probably not much more than the kind of the 1-11 campaign that we saw last year. Now, I expect them to be a little bit better defensively. They made some staff changes on that side of the ball, so I think that will help. They kind of essentially are elevating the defensive coordinator who came from North Dakota State kind of into that head coaching role. And so we'll see. But there's just, guys are able to transfer these next 30 days. I would imagine if there is any interest in any of those kind of top tier players, they're probably going to end up leaving because, let's face it, Pat Fitzgerald was that program for Northwestern. That's why almost all those recruits, went to this school was to play for a coach like that, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And so I would imagine there's going to be some attrition. And anytime there's an attrition when you're already kind of in that lower end in terms of talent, it makes that the uphill climb even more difficult. And I think overall for Northwestern, this is really just kind of about getting through things, just getting through the season. And kind of speaking to our earlier point about being able to kind of stomach a lot of these losses, I think if there's any school that's able to kind of stomach things, it is this Northwestern fan base. Not the biggest, certainly, but they do love their Wildcats. And at the same time, I think everybody understands that this is going to be a very tough 2023. It was tough to kind of separate from a beloved alum like Pat Fitzgerald. Everybody understands the reason why that happened, though. And I think more than anything, this really is a season that as those losses keep mounting, it's going to turn the attention back on the administration even more so, not only in terms of making the decision to fire their head coach, but, really, what does this school look like moving forward and ultimately who's in charge? And I think that's the other thing to kind of keep in mind is I don't think this is a story that is going to be over, not only anytime soon this season, but, this could have some larger ramifications for Northwestern moving forward.
Let's shift gears a little bit here, Brian. I am excited for some football after dark this year. I think the Pac-12 is going to be wildly interesting. You've got Caleb Williams, your Heisman winner and your favorite this year at USC. Penix Jr. coming back to Washington. You got Bo Nix up at Oregon. Utah won back-to-back titles. They're retooling here. They're sitting there fifth on the odds boards to win the Pac-12 this year. What do you like out of the Pac-12 this year? And do you think they finally get a team into the playoff?
Well, it's kind of now or never. You know, it kind of feels that way, you know, especially with USC and UCLA leaving the conference and really, you know, just the depth there. You know, I kind of go back and forth in terms of, you know, who really is kind of the top to bottom best league in the country. And I think the Pac-12 certainly will have their case. You know, you look at, especially at the quarterback positions. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, DJU, a former five-star, kind of being the fifth or sixth guy in the conference, when you're kind of sorting out that pecking order, you know, that says something in terms of the depth that they have at that most important position. But it's going to be a slog. You know, I think for the Pac-12, they can build some momentum early, but it's those late in the year games, you know, that are really going to be the separators in terms of who can make it to the Pac-12 title game, who can make it to the CFP. And I think for USC, you know, this is kind of their year to go all the way. You know, everything is shaped up well for them. Obviously, you do have Caleb Williams coming back, but, you know, the talent around him has improved as well. You know, I think especially defensively, the defensive personnel that USC has gotten the upgrades through the transfer portal, I think that's going to make some big strides on that side of the ball. I'm not saying they're going to be great or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but they can be good enough to get a Lincoln Riley team to the playoff. And you look around them, I mean, you know, Washington, they have so much coming back. It's not just Michael Penix and all those great wide receivers. They're going to be pretty good defensively as well. I think they're going to make some strides, especially in the secondary, that people, I think, maybe sleeping or overlooking a little bit in terms of actually what they actually have on the roster. And then, you know, you mentioned Utah. I think there is some skepticism over Utah just because of Cam Rising's ACL injury. What's his timetable? Still the school being, you know, pretty quiet on that front. But this is a team that late in the year, they always tend to hit their stride. I would expect something similar given those quarterback issues early in the year. That's a team that you can kind of look out for. Everybody's not taking this team lightly. There's a reason why they've won back-to-back Pac-12 titles, and I think they can have a case if they get some breaks to go the right way. They can maybe make it a three-peat as well.
I always get excited about the Pac-12, and then you referenced it a little bit, what happens in the back half of the season. I always say Pac-12 is going to Pac-12, and they beat each other up, and it stinks. But if it is USC, they are plus 200 in the Pac-12 to win the conference and plus 260, yes, to make the college football playoff. We'll see if they can be the team. Let's go to the Big 12 here these last minute and a half or so, because you mentioned the future conference realignment that's going to happen with the Pac-12. Well, the Big 12, four new additions this year, UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, and BYU. Texas and Oklahoma are going to be on the way out next year to the SEC. Who do you think could really take home the crown this year?
I look at Texas. You know, I think they're a school that, you know, from a talent perspective, that they always tend to have more than everybody else. But I think that's especially the case this year. You know, it really is kind of shaping up, despite losing guys like Bijan Robinson in the draft. You know, Steve Sarkisian has a pretty loaded roster. And if they can all get on the same page, not really pull the Texas of old that we're kind of used to seeing where they trip up, you know, on the road in some of those games. You know, it always seems to like always beat Kansas State back in the day. But, you know, this is a team that I think is posed to not just win the league, but kind of threatened to make the CFP. And I'm not sure they're good enough to kind of win a semifinal game, but I think they're in that conversation, you know, with what they have coming back. The offensive line, they were young a year ago. I think they're going to be so much better this year. You add to that, you know, the weapons at wide receiver. I think having a quarterback back for Steve Sarkisian and Quinn Ewers is going to help them. It seems like the quarterback himself is kind of taking things seriously. You kind of see him shaving the mullet and all that. So I look at Texas being kind of the lead dog, if you will, in the Big 12. But, you know, really from 2 down to maybe 10, you know, you could probably sort it out in about any order.
Good stuff, Brian. Really, really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Texas is your preseason favorite in the media poll for the first time since 2011, plus 120 favorite to go ahead and win the Big 12. We got to take a quick break here, but with the MLB All-Star Game in the rear view, it's time to look ahead to the second half. Mike Somich is going to help us break down what's going on in MLB beginning Friday.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located here on the Las Vegas Strip or nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification, eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Alongside Mike Somich, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. The 2023 MLB All-Star Game is in the rear view, which means the second half of the season is upon us, Mike. We've got the trade deadline in 20 days. And heck, over the next 12 weeks, pennant races, awards, all those things are going to be decided. So a lot to figure out here at the back half of the year. But I'm excited.
Yeah, it's been a fun baseball season so far. I'm become a huge Cincinnati Reds fan. Got them at 40-1 to win the division. We've got 6 of the next 12 against the Brewers, so it's going to be a big stretch there for the Reds and what they're able to do. I like these division bets, though. I think you can find some value sitting in these divisions if you're willing to go against the favorite. There's certain ones that are already wrapped up. I don't really want to go against the Braves, who are sitting there at minus 5,000. There are other spots where, like the AL Central, where it seems like it's the Twins and Guardians. I would have been interested in a little bit of the White Sox at 25-1. They've announced their sellers over the weekend, so I don't think we can go there. But it's going to be a fun stretch run here because you have some divisions like the AL East that are very good and some that are very bad like the AL Central and the NL Central. But it's fun to see the juxtaposition of those two and see if we can find some value inside these divisions.
Yeah, and trying to think ahead, like who could have that surprise run to the postseason? Which one of these current division leaders could have a second half collapse? It's fun just trying to look ahead, predict the future, see what we can. We call it gambling for a reason and make a decision. Do you have any bold predictions that you would like to share?
Well, let's start out in the AL East. Like I mentioned, really tough division. You have all five of these teams that have been close to over 500 pretty much the entire first half of the division. The Rays started out with that 13-game win streak, jumped out on this division, have played 10 games above 500 since, so still very good baseball. But to me, there are issues on that pitching staff and specifically in the bullpen. You look at the second team in that division, the Orioles. Great story. Their offense can hit. Again, I have some pitching staff concerns there. They're sitting on the board at plus 400. If you go one further down, let's talk about the Blue Jays right now. Plus 1,100, 11-1 to be able to win the AL East. They're 7 games back of the division, so they need to make up some ground. But this is the type of team that I think can. Pretty much everything that could go wrong early in the season from a pitching perspective went wrong. We saw Alex Manoah get shipped down to rookie ball and then come back up. He had a very good start after that. If he can right the ship in the second half, all of a sudden this Blue Jays rotation is pretty good with Gausman on it. You've seen Barrios pitch very well so far in the first half. You've got the bats to be able to make a dent in the on the offensive side with Guerrero Jr. and with Bichette on the offensive side. But the key to me here, they went 7-20 in the AL East in the first half of the year. 7-20. That is just awful. And that's not sustainable. This is a team that should be around 500 in this division. If they're able to go 500 the rest of the way and not give up 13 games to the rest of the division, I think they have a legit shot at making up these 7 games, especially since I don't think the Rays or Orioles are quite as good as they played in the first half of this of the season. So I'll take a shot with the Jays here at 11-1 to win the division.
Well, and the odds are there. Like, if it's a very, very attractive number, obviously. And if you think that that can pan out, I mean, 50-41, you talk about the AL East being one of the more competitive divisions versus like an AL Central. What any of those teams would give to be sitting there at 50-41 right now? Let's go to that AL Central, because my bold prediction isn't necessarily a bet, but tell me what you think about this, that the winner of the division will finish with a sub 500 record. I very firmly believe that 80-82 coming through the back end of the year is not out of the realm of possibility for one of those teams. Yes, the Guardians and the Twins are ahead of the pack here, but the Guardians being the division leader, 45-45 right now through 90 games. The five teams in the division have combined for a minus 288 run differential and are 110 and 191 when not playing each other. I feel like there's real potential that this could be a reality. It's hard to do, don't get me wrong, but I feel like it could be possible. They're like the NFC South of the MLB.
Well, I hope you're right, Stormy, because these are two of my favorite teams to bet against. I consistently am playing against them first five, laying the half run, playing unders with both of these teams because neither of them like to hit the baseball very much. I wouldn't be shocked if both of these teams are hovering right around 80 wins when we're staring at the end of the season. You've also had rumors that both of these teams are going to be sellers, even though they're ahead of their division and a half game out of it. If either of those teams sell anything, they're just going to get exponentially worse here. I mean, if you take Bieber off the Cleveland team, the Guardians pitching staff is pretty bad. And so he's one of those players that we've heard is going to go at the deadline. If he does, all of a sudden, that's another step down there. The Twins, if they give up any of their bats, they're in a world of hurt because their offense is already terrible. So you could see these teams take steps backward toward the second half of the season. Like I mentioned, if the White Sox decided not to sell, being 8 games back at 26-1, they would be really interesting to me because this is a team that has the talent. They have just underproduced, criminally underproduced now for 3 straight years, it feels like. I would be willing to take a flyer if the news didn't come out earlier this week because I do think the top 2 teams in this division have a bunch of issues that they're not going to try and solve at the trade deadline.
What I feel like would be even more hysterical is, let's say we have a sub-500 division winner. They win the wild card series, advance to the ALDS, and they beat the Yankees, who have 91 wins or something like that. Like that's, I mean, baseball is weird. Things like this could happen. Isn't there another division that you've really honed in on here looking ahead to the second half?
Yeah, I think the NL West is awfully interesting as well. And it's a division where we came into this and the sexy pick was to take the Padres. That's been a dumpster fire.
Don't remind me.
Move along from the Padres here. You had the Diamondbacks who came out of the gate hot, played very well, opened up a little bit in the division. And the Dodgers just kind of keep chugging along here. Well, when you look at those top two teams, again, I'm going to go back to pitching here. The Dodgers, Kershaw is in the Cy Young conversation, but he's on the DL right now. Urias spent a lot of time on the DL early. They've got rookies, Bobby Miller and Emmett Sheehan, pitching as the 4 and 5 starters right now for them. And their offense is not nearly as deep. They're one injury away from being in trouble on offense. That's not something we've seen from the Dodgers of the past. So I believe they are beatable in this division. We talked about the Diamondbacks already. They started out hot. Their pitching is a problem. They really are depending on Carroll, who's been phenomenal in his rookie season. Here's an MVP talk. He's not going to win it. Acuna's going to win it, but he's in the MVP talk there. I don't think they're able to replicate their first half or their second half. And then you have the Giants there just sitting 2.5 games back, and they're at 7-1 to win this division. If I was going to take a flyer in the NL, I think the Giants are the team that you want to take a flyer on here to win the NL West. They had a nice long winning streak. You can tell the clubhouse is gelling. They've got 2 top tier pitchers in Logan Webb and their second starter as well, who's pitching very well off the DL. And they've really figured out this bullpen game. It feels like once every 5 days, they're able to send their bullpen out and hold the opponent to 2 or 3 runs and be able to chalk up a victory there. It's a Giants team that I think is being underlooked right now. And getting 7-1 with a team that's just 2 games back, with the 2 teams in front of them that I think both have injury issues on the pitching side, there's some value there sitting on the Giants the second half of the season.
Yeah, 7-1 in the division, 14-1 in the NL, and to your point, just 2.5 games back. You mentioned earlier you're not going to do anything in the NL East. The Braves are a big leader, minus 5,000, minus 4,000, depending on the book that you're looking at for their price in the division. They're also the favorite to win this year's World Series, currently at DraftKings plus 330, followed by the Dodgers, Rays, and Astros. Do the Braves feel like they could be poised to make another run here this season, you think? Or is there another team that to win it all, you have your eye on at a longer price?
It's pretty tough to make a reasonable argument against this Braves team. I mean, their bats are just phenomenal 1 through 9.
I mean, even watching the All-Star game yesterday, you look in the outfield and you look in the lineup for the batting order and you're just like, okay, Braves, yeah, fine.
Braves. You got Dodgers hitting 2, 3, 4. But other than that, it was pretty much all Braves on the NL team. And the pitching is good too. I mean, Spencer Strider, arguably the best pitcher in the NL, one of the favorites to win the Cy Young. So it's not like you have issues in the bullpen. It's not like you have issues on the starting side. They can put up runs in bunches. I mean, I respect the heck out of this Braves team. It's hard to try and make a case against them winning the World Series. If you want to take a flyer with someone, I think you look to the AL and you say, okay, who do I think can come out of the AL? And maybe someone knocks the Braves off. If I'm looking for a price, I mean, I don't hate Houston, but they're a little bit too short for me. I'd go back to the Blue Jays. I mean, if they get in, they're as dangerous as anybody else. And you can get a pretty big number on the Toronto Blue Jays right now to win the World Series because they're sitting in third place in a tough division. So if I'm trying to take a shot, I think the Braves are the most likely team to win the World Series. I want to take a big number. I'm not looking for an 8-1. I'm looking for a 25-1. So I can create some value there if I am able to get through the first couple rounds of the postseason and get some hedging opportunities.
Yeah, and a good reminder to shop around this time of year. The Blue Jays at DraftKings 17-1, but you can find 20-1, 23-1 specifically for that squad. This hour has cruised. We got hour two of the Lombardi Line coming up next. Getting into some NFL news and notes, including the team of Hard Knocks for 2023 has been decided. How will the Jets fare in the public eye early?